Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Poehler, and my guest today is Stephen Carp. I'm sorry, Stephen. Can you pronounce your last name?
Sure. Carpinetta. Thanks for having me, Cynthia.
Carpinetta. I'm sorry. And he's with NIPAM. And we're going to do a discussion about the New York State budget. So the budget was unveiled just a couple of days ago. Are you happy with it?
Well, I think that's a sort of a difficult question. I think I'm happy with it insofar as it definitely contains some improvements, which are have been key to the progressive movement. Obviously, it lacks in a lot of key places, and we have a lot more work to do. But I think one thing that's been the most interesting thing for me to observe is as the landscape has changed in the legislature, so have mm-hmm. many folks' allegiances with certain pieces of legislation and certain key ideas to the progressive movement. I think that there's been too many cases where legislators are out there supporting, quote unquote, certain bits of legislation that they're confident for whatever reason would never become law. And now that we've altered the landscape in the Senate, we have a lot of that progressive legislation on the floor for votes, much of it passing, and we're setting our sights on even more ambitious bits of legislation like New York Health and a more fleshed out version of fair elections.
You know, I'm a keen observer of the political landscape, whether it be, you know, in New York State. I put the TV on, I see what's going on nationally. And let's have this small conversation about the phrase progressive. When the governing body in the state of New York, for the most part, is not really as progressive as people would like it to be, you know, NIPAM and other groups. And it seems like people with money make huge contributions, and those people with money like the status quo. So when you have progressives, so-called progressives, on the outside looking in, and year after year, their legislation is not passed. How do you change that?
Well, I think that what progressives did by and large this last cycle was most clearly brought to light in the action of flipping the New York Senate and all but completely eliminating the Independent Democratic Conference, which had been a handy tool, in my opinion, of the executive branch to sort of give executives space to claim allegiance to very progressive policies, while at the same time having that same fallback that I mentioned a few minutes ago in knowing that certain bills would never clear the Senate. I mean, for instance, the Child Victims Act has been one where activists and advocates fought with religious leaders and insurance executives, and the governor sort of was a proxy being pulled at both sides. But for many years, the governor was able to support the Child Victims Act, but sort of knowing that the Senate would not allow the Child Victims Act to come before him to be signed. So it's just this game in Albany of what can I get away with supporting that my constituents want, quote-unquote supporting, knowing full well that if this legislation were actually come to the table, I'd be in some serious trouble with my big money donors and so forth if I actually tried to mm-hmm. pass progressive legislation.
Right. And how do you break that cycle?
Well, I think, again, our work, NIPAM's work with the Working Families Party, No IDC New York, True Blue New York, and other grassroots coalitions has really proven that people power, so to speak, can beat the billionaire dollars. I mean, NITAN made thousands of calls into IDC districts and spoke to thousands of constituents, just simply alerting them to the practices that their state senators were engaged in, you know, raising funds as Democrats, running as Democrats, garnering all this Democratic support, and then essentially going into the legislature and throwing a wrench right into the machine that was, you know, for so many years was the hopes of progressive legislation. And I think what we do to break that is we coalesce. No IDC, True Blue, NIPAN, Working Families, DSA. These groups have proven that electorally we are much more of a serious threat than we have been in previous years. Just as Gary Greenberg of the Fighting for Children PAC took his fight for CVA to the streets in those Senate districts, we took our fight for the big umbrella progressive movement into those same Senate districts and some others and into county legislative races. And we've proven that our muscle, our, you know, our elbow grease can really compete with these big money donors if we do it right.
That's good. That's interesting. I kind of lost my train of thought as I was listening to you. I'm sorry. So are you happy with the budget?
I mean, by and large, I'm happy with the direction that we're on. I'm not satisfied with the budget as it is. No, I mean, I spent the past few weeks rallying with many colleagues and peers in the Fair Elections for New York movement up, you know, leading up to the budget. And we toiled away and really tried to get some stuff that was important to us moving in the legislature. And, you know, it seems that now with a new set of faces in the legislature and a new landscape, again, we've got sort of we've got issues now in the assembly where, you know, we fought so hard to flip the Senate and get a super 45 member Democratic true majority in that 63 member body or whatever it is. And now we're looking down the barrel of an assembly that has, you know, have been the good guys, so to speak, for the past several years and the ones that have passed all this good legislation time and time again. And now we're looking in there and having issues where perhaps the speaker isn't holding true to some of his promises. And you know, perhaps we don't have so much strong support in the assembly as we thought. And again, I think it relates back to this, what can I get away with supporting, quote unquote, supporting? What can I get away with convincing my constituents that I'm behind issues that they're behind? But how can I also stay out of realistically being held to the fire on a vote on these issues? And now I think we're seeing the assembly, who've gotten away with being the good guys for several years, having their feet held to the fire because now, you know, the Senate is actually passing all this legislation that it previously had blockaded. And the assembly is sort of having to answer for that. And it's shaking out in a somewhat interesting way.
So do you think that now that the Democrats are in control of the state Senate, that Hasty really isn't as progressive as you originally thought?
Well, I mean, you know, I took a meeting with Assemblymember Hasty's legislative coordinator, I believe, about a month ago, and we were talking about a yet unpassed Child Victims Act, and I was largely unimpressed with the take from Hasty's office. This is nothing against the speaker, but I do think that, yes, we're seeing a little bit less progressiveness than we'd like to from the speaker. And I think it's, again, interesting to consider through this lens of what have we been told, what positions have these folks campaigned on and sort of promised us in the public eye. And then now when the time for action comes, they're not acting. Something that I believe constituents, voters, activist groups, grassroots coalitions will not forget and will definitely make it a point to bring that information to folks in district.
Now, how long has NIPAN been in existence?
NIPAN formed pretty much toward the end of 2016 when the last presidential cycle ended. It was born of basically the New York State Bernie Sanders delegates who decided they didn't quite want to throw the towel in on the group they had built. And so we decided that rather than just staying a Bernie group, we would form our own organization, form a nonprofit organization, and strive to advance progressive legislation and a progressive agenda in New York State. So we've been going at this for a couple years now, and we're an affiliate of Working Families Party, and they're an affiliate of ours, and we work closely with DSA and all these wonderful grassroots coalitions, as I mentioned, True Blue, No IDC, Fair Elections, New York Health. They're, again, you know, putting in the work behind the scenes to combat these billionaire dollars that seem to, as you said, perpetuate this ugly status quo that we have.
Mm-hmm. You talked about all these different groups. Other than the membership, does the average person call you up or call other groups up and say, hey, I want to join? You know, because most of the time you'll see activists, you know, time after time, issue after issue, you'll see the same people. But usually the average Joe who's working 80 hours a week to feed their families, they don't have time to get involved. So do you see average people saying, hey, I'm going to lend you, I'm gonna donate $10, or I could do a phone bank for you. Do you see that kind of momentum?
We absolutely do. That is sort of what's kept us alive. Bernie's presidential run in 16 really brought a lot of folks out of the woodwork who had been previously non-engaged or minimally engaged. And I think a lot of those folks have kept their steam up. And those are the folks we see. And of course, NIPAN is the New York State chapter, the statewide chapter for Our Revolution, which is Bernie's official group that he formed after the last election when NIPAN formed. And they funnel activists to us. They have been for the past couple years. Each of our NIPAN chapters are Our Revolution chapters. So we've had the benefit of gaining members through that partnership. And also, of course, on our website, you know, there's a way to join, check out your local chapter. And we do have an email list where we do solicit donations, and that is how we keep the organization kind of going, has been, you know, purely on small contributions from average folks. And we've seen a lot of those average folks that you mentioned stay plugged in with us despite the Bernie presidency sort of eclipsing away. But one thing I will note is now that the sun and moon of Bernie have realigned, so to speak, we are seeing a huge increase in volunteership and in signups and in meeting attendance and event attendance across the state. It's been rather encouraging for us to see.
Now, in 2018, I watched the Democratic primary pretty closely. Would you agree with me when I say that Cynthia Nixon was not the best candidate that could have been picked to primary Cuomo?
Well, I mean, as far as being picked, I don't think that Cynthia was necessarily picked. I have to say, personally, I think that Cynthia Nixon took on an incredible task, and I think she held her head high in the face of some outright terrible misinformation, in the face of criticism that was completely unfounded, in the face of misogyny and all sorts of hardships. I think she, you know, did an outstanding job. The grassroots movement really rallied behind her and gave it everything we had. I think that the bigger problem is, in fact, the sort of super corrupt executive branch that we have, which perpetuates its own status quo by any means necessary. I mean, we saw these mailers go out sent by the New York State Democratic Committee to folks claiming that Cynthia Nixon was anti-Semitic, and just low blows on behalf of the governor, in my opinion. And this is the kind of stuff that it's really no wonder that there aren't a bunch of folks lining up to challenge Governor Cuomo in a primary. I mean, look at what you face when you do so. You've got a $30 million war chest with Wall Street, every real estate executive and pharmaceutical CEO in existence sort of standing ominously behind the shoulders of the governor as he stares at you with his arms crossed. It's an intimidating vision. And I don't think that Cynthia was necessarily a bad candidate at all. And if there was a choice involved in some way, sure. I mean, if there was a field of great contenders that were willing, maybe we could have sort of had a discussion like that. But at this point, it was basically, you know, millions of grassroots activists in New York or grassroots coalition members saying, we've got to run someone against the governor. We're not happy with New York State Democratic politics. And then when somebody sort of fills that vacuum, and there appears to be really no other seriously interested parties, you know, I think we have to rally behind that. We're in a bit of a desperate situation. You know, it's, if anyone is willing to step up and take on the assault that is running against our Democratic governor in a primary, then bless their soul for doing so.
One of the budget issues was fusion voting, and that,
yes,
that stems, I believe, from the Working Family Party. And Cuomo doesn't like the Working Family Party because of, you know, Zephyr Teachout and Cynthia Nixon. So is the Working Family Party strong and viable in New York State?
Well, I think the Working Families Party is strong and viable, and I think that our governor's sort of revenge tactics here, you know, sort of reek of a fear that he has of the power of a movement that can come together without $30 million and force him to dump $22 million of cash on a bunch of, you know, grassroots activists, essentially, which is what he had to do in this last cycle. I think, yeah, the mm-hmm. Working Families Party is very relevant. And I mean, just remember in the press, you know, Bill Lipton went on the record saying that the governor had said he had pulled the 990s. You know, when we were even mentioning the idea of running a primary against him, he had pulled the 990s, you know, the tax forms. He was gonna do his sort of mafioso thing and attack people and underhandedly go after their taxes. It's shameful, in my opinion. And no governor who respected his constituents would act in that manner.
Well, so, overall, are you pleased with what's going on today in the legislature?
I mean, I am. As someone who's worked around the Child Victims Act, that, you know, I mean, we've had groups like the Fighting for Children PAC and Protect New York Kids out here literally fighting in Senate districts, endorsing dozens of candidates. And then to see that law finally be signed into law by the governor, it was truly an amazing feeling. I was on the floor of the Daily News the morning that, the same morning where the governor signed the Child Victims Act, and also, of course, the news came through about Amazon HQ2's withdrawal. To see that bill signed into law was you know, amazing for me. And I'd only been advocating around the topic for less than a year, but to be with other advocates who had waited so long for that was amazing. But now we're on a path to do more. The Fighting for Children PAC now is working on Aaron's Law. They brought Aaron Marin to the Capitol on March 18th for a press mm-hmm. conference, met with the chairs of both houses, both houses education committees, met with the sponsors of the bill in both houses, really productive meetings. Now it's to the point where we've gone from, I think, six sponsors in the Assembly Education Committee to 11 members of the Assembly Education Committee are now sponsored, co-sponsored, or multi-sponsored on Aaron's Law. That's over one-third of the total committee and more than half of the Democrats on that committee. So it's just the support for this bill now is seeming almost overwhelming as well. And am I pleased with the overall landscape? I'll say yes, because it's an improvement on the past. It's certainly far from perfect, but I think it will serve as an inspiration, and it will amplify our grassroots efforts as many activists see the fruit of our labor come in and you know, actually materialize it in the form of New York State law and policy. I think we'll only continue to grow more powerful and make more progressive change in New York.
So explain a little bit about what Aaron's Law is and how many states have passed it.
Sure. Aaron's Law is named after Aaron Marin, who was sexually abused when she was a child by not only a neighbor acquaintance, but also then a family member. She was abused on multiple counts. And her story is that if she had known that abuse was wrong, she might have reported it and saved herself so much hardship and terror. And basically, she's made it her duty, and the first state to pass it was Illinois, her home state. She's made it her duty to get the states as she can. Right now, it's 36. It was 35 states on March 18th when Marin came to Albany and delivered a speech at our press conference. And at that point, you know, New Jersey was looking at it and New York was looking at it. Since then, New Jersey has passed it. So now, you know, there's 36. New York would be the 37th. So as other states sort of continually surpass us, we really need to get moving on it. But anyway, back to what the bill is. It basically mandates education about abuse from familiar parties as well. And it implements a network of support for reporting so that, you know, teachers and other figures which interact with children and which children might go to confide in are trained and empowered with tools to spot abuse and root it out. And it would augment the existing mandatory curriculum in New York State, which is the Stranger Danger curriculum, which it only applies to about 4% of the total child abuse cases. Child sexual abuse, 95% of those cases are from a familiar party, a trusted party, a loved party, a family member, a coach, a priest, someone that the child doesn't really know how to qualify this action as in most cases. So what we do is we get in there with age-appropriate education in a curriculum for each age group so that it's not considered, you know, corny by the child or they don't just shrug it off, stuff that'll make them kind of engage and research is behind this to give them the tools to know what is right and wrong, good touch, bad touch, even when it's someone close to you or someone that you trust and love, makes that distinction clear to kids. And as I said, we mandate Stranger Danger now. So what we want to do is sort of augment that program, which only affects about 5% of cases, with Aaron's Law, which would cover the other 95-96% of cases. And, you know, we've had some opposition. Folks say, you know, there's only so many hours in the day. But you have to look at it this way. I mean, we just passed the Child Victims Act, which opened this path to justice for folks who have been abused. Now the only right thing to do is get folks to that path. If 95% of kids who are sexually abused aren't really sure if it's right or wrong until someday when they're 50 years old and they have a stroke and they break down and they lose a part of themselves, you know, this could all be avoided if we could teach kids at a young age that, you know, in this vast majority of cases of abuse where the abuser is familiar, that's still wrong and it's still okay and necessary to report that abuse. So yeah, Aaron's Law basically – oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying Aaron's Law basically implements that curriculum as mandatory. It can be as little as one school year that the program demands. And it just seems to me like such a no-brainer for our state. Alessandro Biaggi called it the most important piece of legislation in committee right now. Catalina Cruz, the dreamer and freshman assemblywoman, broke down at our event saying that, you know, she could have saved herself years and years of stress and terror in her life if she knew to report her abuse, but she didn't. And instead she dealt with it and internalized it and deals with it now as an adult. And it's just moving stuff. You know, I mean, when you have three legislators in the room and two of them are women who actually have been abused and, you know, and they're telling stories about how this affects them in their childhood, it's just such a no-brainer. We got to move on Aaron's Law for sure, in my opinion.
I had gone to the press conference and Senator Biaggi spoke, and it was pretty emotional.
Indeed.
You know, I'm upset over the fact that it took a number of years for the Child Victims Act to pass. And what's so disturbing is how an elected official can care more about having a little more money through campaign contributions in their pocket than they saw bringing justice to young kids and young adults who have suffered because of predatory actions. That is so upsetting to me.
My question is,
it took quite a while to get the Child Victims Act to pass. I hope Aaron's Law doesn't take as long as the Child Victims Act does.
Absolutely. No, I hope not. I hope that it can pass this year. We've had promising remarks from many folks inside the legislative bodies and many assembly members and senators, and we're hoping really high. I agree with you that it is just absolutely abhorrent that any elected official who calls themselves a servant of the people would make decisions in the interest of campaign contributions and other selfish motivations over the safety of children. I mean, we have to remember the same kind of governor who would say he would underhandedly pull the 990s and audit people for daring to oppose him. This is the same governor who, in my estimate, supplanted the IDC into the legislature so that he could, from his pulpit, claim support of the Child Victims Act year after year after year. But mysteriously, it never made its way to his desk. And I think the writing is on the wall. And I think 95% of New Yorkers who are tuned in are reading between these lines. And the days of executive politicians or any politicians using these backroom channels to form these shady alliances and carry out this stuff to pull the wool over the constituents' eyes, these days are coming to a quick close.
So what's on the agenda for Nine Pans for the rest of this legislative session?
Well, the rest of this session, we're going to continue pushing for the same stuff we've been pushing for. There's talk in fair elections of bills emerging in both houses there to sort of try to bring some of those provisions back into the focus now that the budget has come and gone. I think there's a lot of pieces of legislation that folks were waiting to launch out post-budget. So insofar as what NIPAN's working on, of course, we are supporting Gary Greenberg and the Fighting for Children PAC in their quest to pass Aaron's Law. We think Child Victims Act was step one. We think Aaron's Law is step two. We got to bring safety and protection to the kids that become our future generation. And I think NIPAN, outside of statewide stuff a little bit, and even, of course, pertinent to statewide stuff still, we're doing massive voter registration drives. All of our chapters have set huge goals for registering voters, making sure voters are properly affiliated so they can cast a vote in the upcoming set of primaries. We've, of course, in many of our chapters, been petitioning candidates onto the ballot. I know up in Onondaga County, we've got several candidates running for county ledge, a couple of them in primaries against incumbent Democrats. So lots of work on the ground. You know, you can always go to NIPAN.org, NYPAN.org, and check out what's going on there. And as far as the Aaron's Law stuff, you can go to ProtectNYKids.org, ProtectNYKids.org, and we keep the latest on the Aaron's Law stuff going there. And as far as the other legislative issues for the remainder of the session, I'm sure we'll be hearing in the news as this stuff happens. But, yeah, look out for a little bit more work on fair elections. Look out for New York Health for the rest of this session and for the next session, looking to set up some contingency there to really make productive headway between the sessions, and lots of other stuff, but you kind of got to tune in to stay up with it. So check us out on the web.
So how does somebody who wants to become a member of NIPAN, how do they get involved?
Well, I think the route a lot of people take is our contact us on the website. I know we have info@nipan.org is our main email address that is monitored by staff pretty much around the clock. And we also have a mechanism on our website where you can locate your nearby chapter and reach out to them. So I would recommend any interested parties go to nipan.org, NYPAN, and navigate to, I believe, the chapters section. And if there might even be something that tries to recruit you before you get there. But if not, head to the chapters section and you'll find information about your nearby chapter and how to reach out to them.
So, Stephen, as the as the session evolves from now until the end of June, let's talk again and you could give people update as to what's going on, your perspective on what's going on and what NIPAN is doing. Would you be interested? Okay, great.
Yeah.
So Stephen, help me out with your last name again.
Carpinetta. No, it's okay. Carpinetta. Carpinetta. People say Carpinetta. It kind of looks like it should be said that way, but the Italian people over in the Carpinetta region of Italy do say it that way, so that's what I go with.
Okay, so you've been listening to Stephen Carpinetta, And this is focused on Albany. Stephen is with NYPAN. So if you like the show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes if you have a comment about the show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Stephen, thank you so much, and I look forward to talking with you again. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Cynthia.